welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders Podcast Series. The goal of this podcast is to bring semiconductor experts together to get to the truth about the matter at hand. We'll get right to the point and not exceed 30 minutes of your time. If you have a topic you would like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. With me today is my podcast partner, Mike Gianfagna. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Dan.
Our guest today is Graham Curran. Graham founded ASIC specialist Sonderl in 2002 after identifying a gap in the market for an international company specializing in complex digital IC design. Graham has extensive experience in the international high-growth technology business arena and has been involved in the acquisition and integration of more than 15 technology companies. Good morning, Graham.
Hi, Dan. Mike, good to talk to you.
So before we get started, Graham, can you first tell us what brought you to semiconductors?
Well, like so many people, I did an EE degree, then very much just luck followed the path, really. I started at a doing systems design and moved on from there. And somebody rang me up one day and said, do you want to come and work for this? What was an ASIC company in Europe at the time called ES2? So I went there. And then from there, I went to Avanti, that some of your older listeners may remember, and finally started Sonderl. So like so many career paths, I don't think it was particularly planned.
Yeah, that's actually most of the stories that we hear, myself included. And I worked for Avanti too, so we worked together for a bit. So let's talk about the ASIC business. Chips become more complex every year. What kinds of new challenges does this create and how does one solve them?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I mean, I think that the challenges have been evolutionary over the last probably 20 years. I don't think there have been very many revolutions. I'm old enough, as I say, to remember some of the first ASICs back in sort of the LSI Logic days. And I was a customer for them in a very early days with, funnily enough, 7,000 gate ASIC. That has stuck in my mind. That's what, 28,000 transistors, which was considered state of the art back then. But actually, things have really just evolved, and the biggest things really is just they get more complex. The physics does move on, of course, so it's a multidimensional problem in a way. You have more physical things to fix every time, more timing modes and so on. But ultimately, it's still the same thing. You know, the foundries are still doing the same thing that they were doing 20 or 30 years ago, and we're still doing the same, solving the same sorts of problems. And indeed, the things that trip people up are still the things that have been tripping people up for 20 plus years. It is a bit funny for a sort of a high tech industry, but I think that's the reality of the situation.
So it's interesting. Let's dig a little bit deeper into the advanced nodes. So Sonderl is one of the few companies that's actually working at 5 nanometer. What do you have to do differently at 5 nanometer when you compare to the larger nodes that came before?
So almost all the challenges today are about complexity, really, design size complexity. If you look at, you know, we all look at graphs and say, okay, yes, designs are getting more expensive. And there's lots of graphs which are all exponential growth, and they all show designs are getting more expensive. But what people probably don't stop to think about is that expense is really manpower. So when 20, 30 years ago, you were looking at a couple of days to do the physical design on a design, you know, now you're looking at 12, 18 months for a team, which might be 50, 100 people. So everything associated with that is what's making life more challenging. It's the costs, it's the budgets, it's the management structure, it's the size of the data, it's the data management, it's all those things. It's not anything that's specifically really related to the technology. So, you know, if you did a design with 3 billion transistors in 20 micron, it would probably have the same challenges as doing 3-5 billion transistors in 5 nanometers does.
Interesting. But by the way, you know, looking at the more advanced nodes like that, I think is a winning strategy. I worked at eSilicon in the early days, and we evolved the company into an advanced FinFET ASIC supplier. And being at the cutting edge is really an exciting place to be, and it's frankly can be a very rewarding place to be. So I admire and appreciate your bravery to take on these advanced designs. It's not an easy thing to do. You know, you mentioned manpower. I think I agree with you. It's the complexity is the main enemy here. Is there a shortage of people with the relevant skills to design at these advanced nodes? And how do you deal with that problem if it does exist?
Yeah, for sure, there's a shortage of people. And I think everybody in the world, in all countries, we're seeing the similar issues, whether it's in China or India or the US or anywhere, everyone's got a manpower shortage. And of course, again, it comes back to this exponential growth thing. When it took one person to design a chip and the next one took twice as many people, you could find the extra one person. If it takes 200 people to design a chip and the next one takes twice as many, you've got to find another 200. And that scales the problem considerably. So getting enough people of the right quality and, you know, in much of the sort of, well, certainly within Europe and to some extent in the States, we're just not training very many engineers now. So that's why more and more people are looking to do more and more in China, in India, where there are more engineers, but there's still a shortage.
So Graham, let's talk about design iterations. This is something that I always wondered about. So a lot of designs are the next generation of the same product, you know, and on one hand, a design team can build up, you know, great skills with that specific product or that product family, evolving it to the next iteration. But on the other hand, you know, doesn't working on the same design over and over prove to be repetitive and maybe less innovative for the design team?
Well, I think it depends who you asked as to how you, the sort of answer you got for that question. I mean, certainly, you know, the people who work for us enjoy the fact that they can be working on a chip for a, you know, for a gaming console one minute and the chip for a mobile phone or a networking thing the next. They enjoy that variety. But, you know, there's also a great satisfaction in doing the best and making it even better. Yeah, doing something that you think is the state of the art and then actually finding ways to improve on it is also needs a lot of innovation. So I wouldn't say that one was better than the other. I think that, you know, people enjoy different things and face different challenges. And the good thing about semiconductors, of course, is there always are new challenges and it's addressing those that keeps everybody interested.
You know, so more specifically, what are the real challenges and benefits of doing multiple different products for different people?
There's a number of things that we can bring to bear that we find quite useful. If you're doing the same design over and over again, you get very good at it, but you typically get very good at doing using the same libraries, the same techniques and polishing those. But it's quite possible that there are other techniques being used in other industries that could be applicable to you, especially as you're system requirements have moved on. And some of the classic cases for that was back some time ago when mobile phones were doing a lot on power management and we were working a lot on processors using very clever power management techniques. And they weren't being used in other industries because they weren't necessary. But then they did start to become necessary. And of course, we could bring a lot of that expertise in. And it's those types of things where there is added value of doing a lot. The flip side to that, of course, is also we often get asked by our customers, have you done one of these before? And without being too glib about it, of course, the answer is no, we haven't, because otherwise you wouldn't be doing it. But we also have to recognize that very often they're the experts in their systems. What we have is a different, much broader view. And those two things together can be very powerful.
So let's move on to some of the challenges associated with this kind of advanced chip business model. I want to kind of look at two different dimensions. First, what are the common errors that engineers make when designing complex chips?
So the biggest error remains the one that has been in the industry almost forever, which is being encapsulated more recently as sort of shift left in the verification world, but actually it's the same thing. That's getting things right at the front rather than trying to fix them at the back and making sure that you have a plan, you know what you're going to do, your libraries are good before you start. You know, in the physical design world, timing constraints are the biggest challenge for people to get right because the designers don't really use them. If you're a functional designer, you're not really interested, so they get left. But from a physical designer point of view, that's the spec that we work to. and yet time and time and time again, they're not right. Clocks not being defined and so on. That remains the biggest issue, is getting stuff done. If you can get stuff done right up front, first time, you can save an awful lot of time later on. I think the other thing that people forget is the last chip they did is very often two process generations ago. So we all tend to think, last chip I did was maybe 2-3 years ago, it's not that long. The next one will be similar, 10% harder maybe. But of course, very often we've moved on two process generations since then. That means the transistors have got a lot more. There's a lot more of them now. You know, there's maybe four times as many of them. The design is much, much more complex. And people forget that. So they don't really appreciate just how much more difficult the next chip is going to be than the last one. If you're doing one every 3 months, it just sort of happens, you go with it. But if you do one every 2-3 years, as startups do, it's very hard to appreciate that jump.
Yeah, it makes sense. You're advocating the benefit of having an ASIC supplier that's always doing leading edge and staying current versus a company that might do a chip every 2 years. So yeah, that is a familiar value proposition that it makes a lot of sense.
Everybody gets caught out. Yeah, we all get caught out to some extent the first time we do something, with realizing just how much more complex this is than the last one. But doing it more and more often makes you more appreciative and you're less caught out. Yeah, this stuff's difficult, right? I mean, it's full of risk and uncertainty. That's why we're doing it. It's not like building a house, which was the same as the last house you did. You have to have a good appreciation of where those risks are and how to manage them. And you have to be able to share that effectively with your customers and get in the same mindset.
Yep, makes sense. So let's talk about the customer side of the equation. What are the common errors that customers make when specifying complex chips? You know, looking at it from the other direction.
So I always think our job is to match what's possible in the silicon with what they know they need for their customers, because most often, companies doing systems know what the customers need, but they don't know what's possible. We tend to know what's possible, but of course we don't know. We're not the customer experts. We're not the market experts. So it's trying to match some of those things up and get that reality. And of course, there are always people in the market who will oversell, and we try not to do that. You know, our aim is to get repeat business. As I always tell people, it's not this chip, it's not this engagement that's important, it's the next one. And that means sharing reality with the customers, getting shared level of expectation, and meeting shared objectives and working through issues as we get them together.
You know, let's, one final question. Taking a new complex ASIC from concept to shipping silicon can be very expensive. In fact, in the media, it costs billions of dollars, right?
Yeah.
What things should designers do to minimize risks?
I think find somebody that you can trust to work with. You know, come and work with us, for example. Be open, be ready to hear things that maybe you don't want to hear or don't want to believe, and be realize that some of the past experience may not be as relevant as you'd like it to. I think this trust is really, really important to minimize risk. You know, people will go into designs thinking that because they worked at a big semiconductor company and all the IP was of a really predictable quality, it will be the same. But if you're taking IP from 6 or 7 or 8 vendors, as is typical today, there will be bugs in it. There are bound to be bugs in it, and some of it will not work together. So if you want to manage the risks, a lot of it is about being realistic about what they are in the first place and how to manage them and being open about it. And if you can do that, you've got a very, very good chance of getting through without any nasty surprises. And there is no real reason why you have a nasty surprise. I mean, we've never had failed silicon in the hundreds of chips we've done over nearly 20 years. Because if you do the right bits in the right way, there's no reason why you should get failed silicon. It should work, and it should work and perform in the way that you want it to do. You've just got to be realistic about it.
Yeah, getting it right the first time is critical. I wonder if those huge estimates that people are making for ASICs are including maybe five respins or something.
But of course, they're also including bottom-up designs, and not many people do a full bottom-up design. I mean, you bring a lot and share a lot of reuse between products.
Sure, sure. And they also include software, which, you know, is a different story altogether.
Yeah.
Well, this is a good place to stop. Great content, Graham. Thank you for spending time with us, and thank you everybody for listening, and we'll see you again next week. That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening, and have a great day.